everybody, and welcome back to my Sharona and also my damage report. Today is a special day, a chaotic day. I feel really weird. I don't know if maybe it's because I'm giddy, not necessarily about the news, although the news is cool. I'm giddy about our guest. We got Anna Kasparian. Anna, how's it going?
Hey, I feel like you're giddy about all your guests, but it's okay. I'll pretend like I'm special and I'm doing well.
No, you are. You are. So if you were to have a spreadsheet, which I'm almost nerdy enough to do, of all the different characteristics of the host, there's reason, like if we bring people on repeatedly, it's because they're awesome. But with you, it's like this like warm, cozy thing. I know it's gonna be okay. There's not gonna be any problems. You're gonna have stuff to say. It's gonna be awesome. I feel comfy with you.
Oh, I feel comfy with you too. Yeah. That's why I love you hosting the main show with me every Wednesday. So I'm happy to be here. And let's do it. Let's get it started. Let's talk about the news.
We're about to, but first we're gonna talk about stuff tangentially related to the news, like the fact that you're watching a news show and you're doing it online. You made that choice. Now you can make the choice to also hit the like button so that other people know that we're actually live. Since notifications ceased to exist in 2021, apparently. And I know what you're probably saying, but I've done all this stuff that YouTube wants for me to get notifications. Nope, not good enough anymore. You gotta do other stuff, sorry. Find a bell, ring it. Ring any bell you find. Hit any like button. If you see a thumb or a fist, do something to it, I don't know. But anyway, if you could do that, that would be awesome. And as we go through this hour of news, if you'd like to send us tweets, comments, super chats, anything like that, we'll respond to your questions and concerns. And with that said, Anna, why don't we do this thing?
Let's do it.
I want to give you a warning ahead of time of the video that we're about to show you. It is a video of an assault and a particularly brutal assault. So consider yourself warned. This was filmed yesterday. It shows a man who we're going to get to that they are now looking for, assaulting a 65-year-old Asian American woman. While others look on, and at least in the video that we can see, did nothing to aid the woman. So again, content warning on this, but here is the video. So the journalist who I found spreading this, Sifan Kim, says that the NYPD says she was walking to church that morning. This is yesterday when the suspect assaulted her and said, "F you, you don't belong here." They gave the address there too. And by the way, they are looking for the individual. So if you live in that area near West 43rd Street, there's photos from some sort of surveillance of the individual that they believe is the one who committed the assault. And they're looking for information. You can see the number there. Also, a bit of context, although this is the assault that we're gonna be focusing on in this video. That same day, police say they're investigating after an Asian man was left unconscious during an attack in the subway. So we can't do all of them in great detail because America is so rife with both violence and racism that multiple attacks like this happen in one city on any given day. But Anna, that was a pretty rough video.
You know, the thing that obviously the perpetrator should be the focus of the story. And you know, I don't mean to shy away from talking about that. That's the heart of the story. But with that said, I do wanna just quickly touch on the fact that at least from that video, you have people witnessing what's taking place, but not immediately intervening, doing what they can to prevent this guy from attacking her further, right? I don't understand it. I mean, I'm a pretty small person physically, and I wouldn't be able to stop myself from doing what I can to stop this guy, right? What are you guys doing just standing there? Is that a security guard like in the building? Why are they not? What are you securing exactly? If you're not gonna get involved and try to protect this woman from being attacked further. And honestly, in regard to the assault, I don't know what to say that isn't already obvious, right? No. I mean, it's brutal, it's disgusting, and the fact that this man is out on the loose is pretty terrifying.
Yeah, Yeah, it looks, at least in the video, like they go to close the door at the end. The video cuts off, so we don't know what happened after that. Maybe the person then walked through to help her. I don't know. But they watched while he kicked this woman 4 times, I believe, and then slowly walks away. And look, I try to be understanding, I try to play devil's advocate. If you saw this, a couple things would be going through your mind. Obviously that it's horrible, but you'd be shocked. And you know, when humans are shocked, the easy thing to do is nothing. And also, if you see what looks like a big guy assaulting someone, you don't necessarily know what he could do or what weapons he could have if you run out. So for instance, Anna, you say that you would have the inclination to run out and help. If I were you, I would be worried what would happen to you if you were to run out and help. That a person who can see an elderly woman walking down the street towards him and just casually kick the person down. I don't know, what is that person capable of? If that person has a knife or a gun, I don't know. So I want to assume the best of people, even people who in this video don't come off very well because they're not helping this woman, and just assume that they're terrified that we're a country where people routinely carry guns around and kill each other. So maybe that's what they're afraid of. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm correct in assuming based on his physical appearance that that guy inside the building was a security guard, he should maybe think of a different profession because he's not securing anything. And it's, you know, these kinds of attacks, of course, have increased. Violence or violent crime, I should say, across the country has gone up. I know that this has a racial angle to it as well, but you know, we do have a violent crime problem in the United States right now. We're seeing record numbers of violent crimes across the country right now. 2020 is when we noticed a pretty significant spike, and. Yeah. You know, I think that it's a more complex issue than people realize because, you know, I know, speaking as someone who lives in California and has experienced this firsthand, you know, we have tens of thousands of homeless people. A significant portion of those homeless people have severe mental health issues. Some of them become incredibly violent as a result. And I've personally been physically assaulted, not to that extent, on 2 different occasions people who have severe mental health issues. And I'm not saying this to demonize them. I'm saying this because we have so many social problems in the country and economic problems that lead to everyone losing in the end. The people who are disadvantaged, the people who have the mental health issues, the people who just wanna take their dog out for a walk and they get met with, someone who might be, with living on the streets, undiagnosed, not getting the mental health care they need, not getting the housing they need. I mean, we have a serious problem. And I think what ends up happening is sometimes those problems get acknowledged, but people are not willing to do what's necessary to provide and fund the social services that people need, right? Everyone deserves to live in a home. Everyone deserves to have the healthcare necessary to live happy, healthy lives. In this case, you know, I wish we knew more about the perpetrator. I wish we were able to bring him to justice, but it's terrifying. You know, I don't wanna fearmonger, but everyone needs to be super careful when they're out. Have your head on what does my husband say?
Swivel?
Swivel, there we go. I was gonna say shivel. I'm like, that's not the right word. Yes.
No, you don't wanna shiv in your head.
Yeah, but also don't be overly paranoid. Just be vigilant and just try to protect each other, guys. When you see stuff like this, I get it. Obviously, take inventory of the situation and don't put yourself in harm's way. But if you're there with a group of people, especially if there's a security guard involved, do what you can to try to help someone who's being attacked like that. It's really heartbreaking. One other thing I want to note is, you know, there's this thing called the Citizen app. I don't know if you've heard of it or if you've been on it.
No.
But the Citizen app basically, it's a crime app. So whenever there's crime in your area, you get notified about it. And sometimes there are people on the ground who are filming, like live streaming from their phones. And it's kind of amazing how many people are just willing to stand there and film a violent assault, but don't do what they can to help the individual who's being assaulted. You know, it's just call the cops, do anything other than just stand there and film what's happening.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I think you covered it very well. So why don't we just put up that that image with the information? If you have seen this person, if you're in this area, I know there's a very small chance, but if somebody watching this can potentially help to get some justice for this woman, I think that would be a great thing. So that information is there.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
I recently saw some video of the director of the CDC, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, talking about the current state of the pandemic and where she thinks it might be going. And it's dark. Take a look at this.
I'm going to pause here. I'm going to lose the script. And I'm going to reflect on the recurring feeling I have of impending doom. We have so much to look forward to, so much promise and potential of where we are, and so much reason for hope. But right now, I'm scared.
The CDC director saying that there's a lot of reasons for hope, but she also sees people's changing behavior. She sees the case count starting to creep up, and she says she feels this sort of deep sense of dread about where we might be going from here. And you know, we can see the numbers. According to the New York Times, the 7-day average of new virus cases as of Sunday was at about 63,000, a level comparable to late October's average. It was up from 54,000 a day 2 weeks earlier, an increase of more than 16%. And I remember how October and November went. We could potentially be moving into another phase of that. And what do you know? It's a few weeks after a bunch of states started reopening again because the pandemic's done. We don't have to worry about it. So hardly shocking.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to put my biases out there. I knew that this was likely, and I've been intentionally avoiding the story because, look, the fatigue is real. And for people who have actually been following all the rules and doing everything they were supposed to do, and I'm included in that group of people, it's kind of gotten to a point where we're entering, like, we're in spring already, right? Yeah. We're about to enter summer, and it's like we already lost all of that. And I'm just speaking for myself. We already lost all of that, like, after following all the rules, and the idea of losing it again, another year of having to stay indoors. You know, you can go outside for a walk, but you're not able to, like, meet with your friends, your family, all, like, it's all really difficult. I mean, to be that principled, and it's difficult. I'm just going to put it out there. And I think that there's also this sense that since people are getting vaccinated, well, then the risk in not following guidelines has been lessened. And that's just not the case, right? There's still a lot of people who haven't been vaccinated. We still have to be vigilant. We've got to be careful. And the other thing that, you know, everyone needs to take into consideration when they feel like being a little more laxed with the guidelines is that, you know, the reason why we're seeing variants of the virus is because the virus mutates. And my fear is we're going to see mutations that are not responsive to the vaccines that we have. And that would be a disaster.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, so far,
we've got to be careful.
Exactly. So far, we don't see that. But Yeah. And you know, it would be a great way of avoiding that is if everybody's responsible and we don't, because it needs to continue to spread and multiply and grow and reproduce. That allows it to mutate. If we can just stop that, we don't have to have the variants we have right now. If we had actually taken it seriously last year, we produced this with our irresponsibility. I want to give you just a little bit more from Dr. Walensky. She urged Americans to just hold on a little longer and to get vaccinated against the virus once it's their turn, which I think thankfully a lot of people will, although many conservatives have no intention of it. She says when cases rise as they have over the last week or so, they often quote surge and surge big shortly thereafter. And she said, I'm speaking today not necessarily as your CDC director and not only as your CDC director, but as a wife, as a mother, as a daughter, to ask you to please hold on just a little while longer. And look, what we have now, at least a change from before. We have, you know, the CDC director feels free to speak openly about the actual fears. There isn't as much censorship as there was last year. And then you also have a president who at least is going through the motions of trying to get people to be responsible. So here is a bit of President Biden from yesterday talking about masks.
I'm reiterating my call for every governor, mayor, and local leader to maintain and reinstate the mask mandate. Please, this is not politics. Reinstate the mandate if you let it down. And businesses require masks as well. The failure to take this virus seriously, precisely what got us in this mess in the first place, risk more cases and more deaths. Look, as I do my part to accelerate the vaccine distribution and vaccinations, I need the American people to do their part as well. Mask up. Mask up. It's a patriotic duty. It's the only way we ever get back to normal. To cheer together in stadiums full of fans. To gather together on holidays again safely. Go to graduations, weddings.
So, Anna, I'm glad that he's saying it, that he's saying it's a patriotic duty, that it's not about politics. These are all the things that I wanted Trump to say that he was too weak and small to say. That said, it's not going to get through to the people who need to hear it. I mean, it's better than nothing, but it is politics to these people. It is so core to their political identity to want to get and spread this disease.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the main problems is we have a party, the Republican Party, which, you know, until recently was led by in some ways is still led by Donald Trump, unfortunately, that is unwilling to really provide any policy solutions to the instability that many Americans are dealing with right now. And so what do they offer in lieu of actual robust policy proposals? Culture wars. And the mask, it very intentionally became a symbol of a Republican fueled culture war. And unfortunately, Republican voters fell for it to their detriment. And so, you know, I think that there's a part of me that's kind of gotten to a point where I'm like, okay, all right, you want to get sick, get sick. You don't want to wear the mask. You want to, you know, you want to get people close to you sick. You don't want to follow the guidelines. Like, what are we going to do? Like, how am I going to force anyone to do anything? And so I think it's a defense mechanism, a self-protection mechanism, just so I don't lose my mind, to just kind of brush it off as, you know, you do you, boo. As long as my family's vaccinated, as long as my loved ones are protected, as long as we're okay, I'm not going to try to dictate what you do in your personal life. But it is unfortunate, precisely for the reasons that I mentioned earlier. The reason why we have variants already is because this virus mutates. And there is the potential of a variant or variants that are not responsive to the vaccine. That's what we need to be concerned about. And it just sucks that these loser politicians who don't offer any real solutions to people have decided instead to focus on the culture wars and to turn something that can literally save their lives, something as simple as a mask, into a symbol of that culture war.
Totally. Yeah. And look, God, it's so dark, but like on theoretically, you know, 6 months from now, we will still be giving updates about the pandemic, but at that point you might think, well, the people who will be getting sick and dying at that point are the ones who have chosen not to get vaccinated. So that will be a particular type of tragedy. But that's not even necessarily true. I mean, that's mostly what it's going to be. But there are people who cannot get vaccinated for health reasons, or because they're too old, or because they're too young. And so those who choose not to will still be able to infect those who cannot. And it's possible, I don't know how likely it is possible that that variant that Anna's worried about that can affect people with the current vaccines will have time and room to grow in the people who choose not to get vaccinated. And so since they choose to be a breeding ground for COVID for the next few months, the next couple of years, they might produce something that can once again begin threatening everyone else. And that's even leaving aside the fact that the vaccine isn't 100% protection anyway. And so you're still always going to be at risk from the people who choose not to get vaccinated. Now, that said, bit of good news yesterday. At least 6 states, Texas, Kansas, Louisiana, North Dakota, Ohio, and Oklahoma made all adults eligible for vaccination. New York also said that all adults would be eligible starting at April 6th. So look, especially Texas, big state, big population, probably gonna be a lot of COVID there since their governor doesn't give a damn about it. So good that you can get vaccinated there. And New York, obviously, like sort of the starting point for all of this, having everyone be able to be vaccinated is not only great considering all that New York has been through, but also, in theory, future variants on the virus are probably going to hit New York like they did the first time. So all the more reason you would want people in these big sort of transit hubs to be as vaccinated as possible. We've been talking about it forever, and it gets better, sort of a little bit. But man, they are just trying to drag out as many deaths and illnesses as possible. Like we've said for months and months. They're working for COVID. They're not getting paid. They're unpaid interns for COVID-19, basically. Just working in its best interests.
They might pay with their lives. I mean, something that's to consider.
True. Yeah. Yeah. Or they might just kill other people. The Republicans are dead serious about the situation at the border. And you can tell how serious they are with how comical every bit of their videos they've filmed down there have been. So this is like from yesterday, I think, but there's no way that we couldn't bring it back. We have a bit of this like sort of joint Republican senator and congressperson trip to the border. They're very tough. They're very cool, as you'll see here. Yes, so you saw there is Colonel Possum Face and Lieutenant Uncomfortable. God, why are they on the boat? Why are they on the boat? And Ted Cruz, like at least Lindsey Graham looks as uncomfortable as he is. Ted Cruz is like proud of himself. Can we go to the Ted Cruz? Like this stupid look on his face. Oh my God, I do it.
Why would you do that to your audience, Sean? Why would you have them look at that face? Anna, it's so unfortunate.
Anna, are we in a bubble? Do conservatives watch that video and think, yeah, tough. Those are tough men. Alpha squad coming in. Is that what they're thinking? Are conservative women like fainting? Ted Cruz. Is that what is going on the right? Are we in so durable a bubble carved from adamantium that we can't tell that is a hunka burning Cruz right there?
I mean, maybe we should talk to his wife and see how she feels about him. I don't think that people look at Lindsey Graham or Ted Cruz and see anything quote unquote alpha about them. But unfortunately, I would argue most right-wing voters and even some Democratic voters do fall for is the pretty disgusting and unnuanced talking points coming from Republican lawmakers like Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham. And what I'm specifically referring to is what we're experiencing at the border right now. Because look, if we take a step back and really look at this in an unbiased way, in an objective way, the fact of the matter is the Biden administration so far has not changed anything that Trump had done in the end of his term regarding his response to immigration. And so what Trump did was implement this policy of deporting everyone who comes to the border, even those seeking asylum, and he cited coronavirus as the reason for doing that. Well, a federal judge actually weighed in on his actions toward the tail end of his administration and indicated that when it comes to unaccompanied minors, Donald Trump cannot just automatically deport them. They're unaccompanied minors. It's a different situation. And so when Biden came in, he didn't change anything. He's still, as he sort of said himself, in. It was already baked in, exactly.
Yeah.
So what I'm noticing is that the Biden administration is really trying to present itself as far more compassionate and empathetic toward these migrants, when in reality, if you look at rhetoric, there might be a difference, right? But if you look at actions, there really is no difference so far. There really is no difference so far. So for the corporate Democrats who are trying to make excuses for Biden, sorry, not buying it. For these disgusting, rat-like GOP lawmakers who are trying to make it appear as though they're concerned about the treatment of you know, migrants at the border, please F off. Please. Yep. They don't care. They've never cared. They enabled Donald Trump's insane cruelty with the zero tolerance policy of literally taking children away from their parents at the border as they were seeking asylum. So they have no leg to stand on. Okay. Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, they are the antithesis of alpha. Okay. Ted Cruz is licking Donald Trump's boots till this day. After he insulted his wife's appearance, after he insulted his father and accused him of being a serial murderer, okay? What a pathetic, small man. Absolutely disgusting. Then you have Lindsey Graham who's like, I don't know. I went golfing with Donald Trump this weekend and I love Donald Trump. I absolutely love him. That's alpha, really? No, these are weak, pathetic, little, very little men. And the fact that they are pretending as if they're concerned about what's going down at the border right now is obviously nothing more than political theater. And there's no amount of fatigues or, you know, vests or whatever that these people can wear that could ever make me think of them as strong men, much less small, strong people. They're just not. Yeah. They're nothing more than self-interested, conniving, disgusting human beings. That's who they are.
Yeah, they're looking for a photo op. If you're the Border Patrol, you should be insulted by the fact that they're just using you for that. And they think that sort of like shrouding themselves in some like the military, quasi-military stuff and make them look tough. I personally see people who went to take photos at the border that felt they needed a machine gun mounted behind them. That's how scared they were to go for 10 minutes to take a photo. But anyway, we do have a little bit.
I got to say one more thing. I'm sorry. I have to add one more thing. The migrant crisis at the border is something that was honestly like Lindsey Graham, especially considering how long he's been in Congress, but also Ted Cruz. They're part of the reason why we have migrants looking for safety in the United States. They're the ones who have pushed for and succeeded in accomplishing awful foreign policy objectives that have made other countries incredibly unstable. I'm talking about US-led coups in Latin American countries that overthrow democratically elected leaders just so the United States can install their own little puppet. That kind of stuff, it destabilizes entire regions of the world, right? So when we have a migrant crisis, then they turn around and defame these individuals as violent thugs and criminals, when in reality, the violent thugs and criminals are in Congress right now. They're the ones who have undone the democratic process in Latin American countries. They're the ones who have fueled the crisis that we're experiencing at the border, but they'll never take a good hard look at that. Yeah. I mean, and we as US taxpayers, we foot the bill for that. We foot the bill. So if you're worried about our resources being used on undocumented immigrants, I would argue that you should be far more concerned about your precious resources funding the undemocratic actions that the US government gets involved in other countries. Okay, which destabilizes those countries and leads to migrant crises. That's right.
It's part of a pattern. Just like do something that has an obvious effect and then be shocked when the effect happens. You know,
exactly.
Extract wealth from a community, impoverish the community. Oh, God, why are you all so poor? Oh, there's crime there. How could that have come about? I don't know. Like, yeah, they're always very surprised. Very surprised. Okay, well, really fast, I want to get to these other videos. Lindsey Graham knows the mode that he can shift into that for some reason conservatives like, even though to people like us, it looks like the most fake thing in the world. And that is like his fake anger, like from the Kavanaugh hearing. So here is a little bit, thankfully brief, of Lindsey Graham expressing how mad he is about what's going on at the border.
It is heartbreaking, but this is dumb. This is stupid.
What is your message to President Biden, sir?
Stop it. You don't know what you're talking about. Yeah.
That should be his message to all of the dopes on the boat that he's traveling around on. But yes, Biden's stupid. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Biden isn't really talking about it and he isn't really doing anything. He basically, as Anna has laid out, continuing the Trump policy. That's a reason for us to be angry. It's not really a reason for Lindsey Graham to be angry or the conservatives to be angry, except if they feel like, hey, we'd really love the country to be thinking about something other than the stimulus package that the Dems supported that the Republicans didn't. You know, possible follow-up legislation, all these bills. They don't want that. They don't want to be focused on that stuff. And you know, they lost the Seuss thing. People really aren't focused on that. So they need something and he's providing it. But we also have Ted Cruz, who apparently has been wandering around in the brush for days now. But here's a little bit of Ted Cruz.
Well, just a few minutes ago, there were multiple smugglers on the other side who were shining flashlights at us, mm-hmm. who were yelling at us, who were taunting us, who were taunting, I think they probably assumed we were Border Patrol, but they routinely taunt the Border Patrol.
They taunted me. They taunted me. But there were smugglers over there with flashlights. Yeah? You're giving a lot of details. What do you know? You know that there were flashlights. That's what you know. You know, I once had to scare a person out of my backyard. That person, Wolverine, I assume, because that makes me look cool. There were people with flashlights. Maybe it was another boat I almost said something bad, of really dumb Republican politicians. I'll say that. Maybe that's what was going on with the flashlights. But guys, they just want to be heroes. And so that's why people like that one congressman, Crenshaw, does the action movie video of him. And Boebert is marching around pretending to have a gun in D.C. And he's wearing that shiny vest at the border.
What I don't even that? Know where he. What it's is what, that? Is he wearing a tuxedo vest? Why are you wearing a waiter's vest or a tuxedo vest when you're.
Here's what I'm gonna do. This is my path. I'm gonna take the boat across there and find a nice fancy resort. And I'll be dressed for the occasion.
Ted Cruz, like looking at him gives me a physical reaction. Like it's the Ted Cruz diet plan.
First time anyone's ever said that.
He makes me lose my appetite. Like just looking at him makes me lose my appetite. Like everything about this man. Obviously, it's mostly my feelings are mostly grounded in the fact that he's a despicable human being.
Yes.
But I mean, look, if there is a God, and obviously I'm atheist, so I'm suspicious of that. But if there is a God, man, what did Ted Cruz do in a past life that made God give him a massive L, both physically and internally? Like just L, massive loser. All around.
I think he was a particularly poorly behaved, low moral fiber possum who was reincarnated as a lower being in Ted Cruz. Maybe someday, maybe if he changes his tune, he can come back as some sort of weasel, maybe a stoat. I don't know. But right now,
you're being a little cruel to possums. Like,
yeah, I'm actually a little bit worried. Mary might be watching and she's very, very into possums. Anyway, okay, I don't want to talk about them anymore because it's just, it's so frustrating. There's an actual crisis on the border. The crisis is a humanitarian crisis. It is not a national security crisis. It's honestly like the pedophilia thing. It's how can we talk so much about this, divorce it of all of the concern for actual people, while doing nothing in this area. They did it with supposedly being all worked up about pedophiles and not caring about any of the actual pedophiles. You'll note they're cool with Jim Jordan to this day. And now with the border, let's really talk about it as a crisis, but never show the people and suggest no solutions to the problems that will actually produce less human suffering. Apparently, there are whispers that there is a possibility that President Biden might reverse longstanding forever US policy of not recognizing formally the Armenian genocide. And there's a lot of pressure being put on him by Democrats to do so. We have a bipartisan coalition of nearly 40 lawmakers led by Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Bob Menendez, urging President Biden to become the first US president to officially recognize the Ottoman Empire's Armenian genocide. They urge Biden to follow in their example, citing their unanimous passage in December of 2019 of a resolution recognizing the facts of the Armenian genocide, adding that the House that same year overwhelmingly passed its own similar resolution. Now, when reached for comment, a senior administration official noted Biden's statement on the Armenian genocide as a presidential candidate, adding in a statement to the Hill. He said then that we must never forget or remain silent about this horrific campaign, and we will forever respect the perseverance of the Armenian people in the wake of such a great tragedy. That's good, but you can't say we shouldn't be silent and then he's not going to do it? Like, is he going to be silent or is he not going to be silent? And by the way, there is a source out there saying that he's going to do it. It's just like, for me, that one source isn't enough to say it's definitely going to happen, but Anna, I'm obviously very curious about your thoughts about what might happen.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly agree with you regarding the one source that says that it's definitely going to happen. I don't even care if it were five sources saying it. I need to see it happen to believe it. And you know, you have to take a more holistic view of the situation. First of all, the fact that the Armenian genocide is still not recognized by the United States government is just deplorable. And it's exactly, I mean, just imagine it in a different context. Imagine how horrific it would be if the United States denied that the Holocaust took place. And so Armenians feel justifiably that rage that any group of people who had experienced that kind of slaughter would feel if a government, especially the United States government, just rejects that historical event took place. It did take place. And in places like Turkey, if you even talk about it and acknowledge it, you can face pretty severe punishment by the government there. With that said, it is important to understand what fuels the United States government and its decision to deny that the genocide took place. And it's all due to our strategic relationship with Turkey and the fact that the United States in its endless wars typically needs Turkey strategically. And so anytime this conversation comes up, we get the same BS from the Turkish government. The fact that they don't want to acknowledge it is really rooted in their fear that they would have to provide reparations for Armenians. And there's also, in my opinion, an ongoing campaign to continue stealing land that historically has belonged to Armenians. One of the more recent examples has to do with our Armenian settlements in Nagorno-Karabakh, which historically belonged to the Armenian people. And Azerbaijan has been and unfortunately succeeded in taking some of that land more recently. And their argument is that no, historically it belonged to us. But Azerbaijan, I mean, I'm just going to leave it there. I don't know if the United States government is actually going to acknowledge it. And it's because of their foreign policy interests with Turkey.
Yeah, I guess it's one of my flaws coming out. A thing happened or it didn't. You investigate, you evaluate the evidence to determine if it happened. If it happened, you acknowledge it because it is dumb to not acknowledge reality. That's what it is. For us, should be a no-brainer. Terrible historical events need to be recognized to make it marginally less likely that they're going to repeat themselves. For Turkey, it's not you. Like, that seems to make it easier for people to acknowledge bad things that were done in the past, but it happened. It definitely happened. You saying it didn't happen didn't make it any less happen. It just It takes it from a thing where you would be criticizing the past to now you're also the bad one. Like you are being a part of it. You could just cut it off and say, here's the fine line. Terrible stuff happened. We're not going to allow it. We're going to acknowledge it. We're going to learn from it. By refusing to do that, you're kind of getting in on the terrible. Not nearly as bad as the murders, obviously, but you're kind of getting bad in on it. And by the way, really fast, for people who maybe you haven't thought much or heard much about this particular situation or America's involvement in it or whatever, I get that. But every place has its own versions of it. Like, think about how viscerally opposed to acknowledging the realities of slavery or Jim Crow the right has been, or the 1619 Project has melted their brains. How they just banned it in Florida. DeSantis banned the critical analysis of white supremacy in the US government, saying you cannot acknowledge that. Is that different than what's going on in Turkey? I don't know. There's been a lot of genocide in America's past. There's a lot of overlap there. So maybe it's easier for us to acknowledge the things that they're not acknowledging over there than the gaps in our own recognition of our history. But we need to acknowledge all of this here. And if we can make it a little bit easier internationally by recognizing it, we should do that too. Especially since Biden said he would, and in the past has acknowledged it. You've acknowledged it. Now you're the president. Do you suddenly not acknowledge it because you're the president? How cowardly is that?
But it's not just Biden. It's I mean, there. I know that Obama promised to recognize the genocide. He didn't. Trump promised to recognize the genocide. He didn't. Biden promised to recognize. And so far, we haven't really seen action behind those words. It's not a Democrat or Republican issue. The reason why it's not really a partisan issue is because whether it's a Democrat or Republican in office, the foreign policy objectives don't change. We're fueled by the military-industrial complex. As a result, Turkey's relationship with the United States is seen as advantageous and strategic from a foreign policy standpoint. And as a result, the denial of the slaughter of 1.5 million Armenians in the Armenian genocide continues to be denied by the United States government. That's the reality of the situation. And also, I think you did a really good job in connecting the dots. The United States has a culture of denial when it comes to the slaughter of various groups of people. And so it shouldn't really be any surprise that trend, that pattern would continue when the US puts its own self-interests that are, in my opinion, not good self-interests above the priorities or above the lives, really, of and above the lives and the history of Armenians.
Agreed. Okay, we've got one more story we're going to try to fit in. So let's jump into this. Hold on to your butts, everybody. You knew from the headline that we were going to eventually get to this. So like with Ted Cruz, you made a choice to grow this news beard. And now we're going to trim it or something, whatever the analogy is. I don't know. We're going to apply a nice balm to your news beard. I don't know. I should probably stop.
Oh my God, please
maybe
stop,
one more.
Please stop.
Okay, no, I'll stop. Anyway. Marjorie Greene is a simple character. She likes her ignorance and she likes the spotlight. And what better way to get more of the spotlight than to try to pick a fight with a congressperson who's actually doing their job? Now, along the way, she's going to demonstrate that first part, though, the ignorance. In this case, ignorance that stands out even from other Republican politicians when it comes to climate change and how all of that works. Here she is at a recent town hall meeting, talking about climate change and the Green New Deal.
As we discussed about the infrastructure plan, the Green New Deal. The infrastructure plan is going to save us all and solve all the climate justice issues. But I keep asking this question and no one's answered it yet. How much taxes and how much money did the people back in the Ice Age spend to warm up the earth? Maybe perhaps we live on a ball that rotates around the sun that flies through the universe, and maybe our climate just changes.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't think a whole lot of spending is going to do anything about it. It's just going to spend a lot of money. And aren't we suckers? Our Americans are suckers. Well, I'll tell you what the Green New Deal and our new infrastructure plan will do. It's kind of bring us down. down to net zero carbon emissions, right? So we've got to stop using oil and coal, right? Because that makes a lot of sense to a little girl named AOC from New York.
Okay, so there was a lot of ignorance there. The throwing in a little girl named AOC, everything about her, ugh. Anyway, Anna, what do you think?
I think that AOC is someone who generates a lot of media attention. And when you are a Republican lawmaker or a wannabe leftist on Twitter, one of the easiest ways to draw attention to yourself is to attack one of the most popular members of Congress. If you have legitimate critique for AOC, I think that that's worth listening to. But clearly there was none of that with Marjorie Taylor Greene. I mean, there's very little substance with that woman to begin with. But this is a little trick that I see happening with people who just want to draw attention to themselves. I would be far more interested in hearing whether Marjorie Taylor Greene has any policy proposals or solutions for the instability that Americans are feeling today. Does she have anything to say about that? Or is she going to continue latching onto culture war issues and attacking AOC in order to give people the illusion of actually working on their behalf? Totally. That's what, you know, Marjorie Greene is doing. That's what most GOP lawmakers are doing. And the second we see them doing it, guys, we need to refuse to take the bait and call it what it is. It's nothing more than posturing and giving people the optics of working for them, when in reality, these lawmakers are doing nothing for their constituents. They're doing nothing in providing solutions for the absolute bleak future that we're dealing with right now, and the bleak present that we're dealing with right now. That's really what's going on here. That's it. That's all it is.
Yeah, well, look, there's a little bit of silver lining, I guess, in this, as was pointed out by Matt Gunnarsson in the super chat. At least she seems to agree that the earth is round. That's true. She called it a ball. That's good. And she acknowledges that it goes around the sun. So conservatives have started to catch up a little bit. But yeah, look, nobody's going to learn anything from her, but I still feel like I should try. When a politician says, I don't know, maybe like we go around the sun and the climate changes, and I don't think a little thing like the Green New Deal is going to change that. The follow-up question should be, first of all, what are your qualifications to make that determination? What research did you do? Who did you talk to? Because the thing is, it's easy for you, a former like fitness club owner, to say all of the climate science is wrong. But they seem to think there's something to it, so maybe you should talk to them. Maybe you should meet with them. Maybe you should explain why your analysis of climate change is more accurate than the bulk of the scientific community over a half century. And she's not going to do that, and she can't do that. But we as voters can be a little bit better at expecting that sort of thing, because it's not always going to be the dumbest Republicans in the country that are saying things that aren't supported by the evidence or by the science. You know, there are plenty of Democrats that are going to stand against policies, and even incredibly incredibly popular policies, for reasons that aren't actually substantive. Like Joe Manchin saying that, you know, the whole country doesn't need any more than $11 an hour minimum wage. Like, we can take a look at the actual cost of living in different areas. We can take a look at how that has changed over time, and his own history on this. And we can expect a little bit more, and hopefully ask follow-up questions based on that. It's easy with Marjorie Greene, I get that, but we should be prepared to turn those cannons on our own politicians too. Remember, we don't worship them, they work for us, at least theoretically. Now, ready for just one more, Anna, really fast?
Let's do it.
There is this debate about the vaccine. Should you get it? Shouldn't be a debate, but I understand some people watch Tucker Carlson and so they think that it'll kill him or whatever. Now, there is a theoretical debate about the reopening process eventually, not the super slapdash automatic reopening process that some states have been doing that are almost certainly leading to more COVID there. But long term, for things like going to tightly packed gatherings, traveling abroad, those sorts of things, you might need to demonstrate that you've been vaccinated. Now, that is not a done deal, and policies will vary, but there's certainly talk about that. And the talk can be productive, or it can come in the form of what we're about to show you from Marjorie Greene, who gives her thoughts about the vaccine and the need to prove that you've been vaccinated.
They want you to be required to have something called a COVID passport. And this would mandate your ability to be able to travel, your ability to be able to go to events, your ability to be able to buy and sell. And I asked the question earlier today, is this something like Biden's mark of the beast? Because that is really disturbing and not good. Oh, if you're going to come into the football game or the baseball game or the concert, you need your vaccine passport because we're trying to do a good job to keep everyone safe. This is what the Biden administration is trying to talk to these private companies into doing. Well, let's analyze that. You see, it's still the same thing. It's still fascism or communism, whatever you want to call it, but it's coming from private companies. So I have a term for that. I call it corporate communism.
Oh my God.
Wait.
Oh my God.
Wait, what if she's way smarter than
us? I think the word communism sounds real scary. So I'm going to go ahead and attach it to everything so I can scare my constituents. I'm going to call it corporate communism.
Wait, was what? That Lindsey Graham?
What?
Well, Anna, it's fascism or communism, whatever you want to call it, you choose. I don't know. There's a difference, and you might want to choose. You might want to choose. Well, you did choose. You called it corporate communism. So what happened to the fascism? There are some fundamental differences in the relationship between government and industry, between those two systems. The obligations or opportunities open to citizens. There are some significant differences between those two things. And I love she's like he wants to do that. So let's analyze that. It's the same thing. It's fascism. That's not analysis. That's pretty shallow. Like, even if you had just gone with the fascism thing, that's not a particularly adept analysis of the situation. But what do you think calling it the mark of the beast adds to this?
I'm an atheist. You know what I think about that? I think it's stupid.
You're not worried about Satan?
No, I'm not worried about Satan.
Your footwear?
I'm worried about people who squander their lives on this planet by changing their behavior based on made up stories about what will happen to them in the afterlife. I worry about that because you've got this one life to live and you're wasting it on believing these mythical things that might stop you from living your true self, your true life, you know, you're carrying out your true identity. And that breaks my heart. But aside from that, she's really dumb. I don't know. I don't really know what else to add to it. She's really dumb. She doesn't know what communism is. She doesn't know what anything is. I would really appreciate if at least just one, it doesn't have to be many, just one, one reporter asked one of these disgusting GOP grifters what communism means. Oh, you know, during this, you know, statement, you mentioned corporate communism. What exactly does communism mean to you, Marjorie Taylor Greene? What does communism mean to you? All right, but putting that aside, like the main focus of what she's trying to say here is also stupid, right? She's trying to fearmonger about this so-called COVID vaccine passport. I don't know if she knows this, but travel requires consent from two different countries, right? So if you're traveling to a country, if that country decides that they don't want you to travel there while you're ill and potentially, you know, continue the spread of this global pandemic, well, then it's that country's right to do it. It's that country's right to restrict travel in order to protect its own citizens from this incredibly contagious virus. So this isn't the United States unilaterally deciding to make our lives more difficult than it needs to be. This is really an issue regarding, you know, a global pandemic where all countries who are negatively impacted by this virus need to make decisions about what they can do to stop the spread. And so we've had travel restrictions throughout this pandemic for obvious reasons. And I can understand the logic and the reasoning behind, you know, having some sort of documentation proving you've been vaccinated in order to be able to be admitted or able to be granted entry into another country. That's really what's taking place here. And so I hear you. The right wing has decided to turn COVID into a culture war issue when that was really unnecessary. They did that because they're unwilling to focus on solutions that would upset their corporate donors. And so if you were hard-headed enough to avoid actual, you know, medical expertise and instead listen to a woman who thinks that corporate communism is a thing, well then sorry, you're not going to be able to travel in some cases. And that's called consequences. It's called taking responsibility for your own actions. Yeah.
Every time I hear her talk, I just think they spent like 2 years straight calling AOC dumb. And they love Marjorie Greene. ID is a requirement for important things like weeding out voter fraud, not for stupid little unimportant things like trying to stop the international spread of a deadly disease. And she hates communism. What she wants is the government to tell private industry, you have to expose your employees to a fatal illness.
No,
none of this makes any sense. Okay, final comment.
Let me just add one more thing. Final thought is these are lawmakers who want to force women to have transvaginal ultrasounds before they can get an abortion. That means that they want women to be prodded with an uncomfortable device that goes up their vaginas to intentionally, purposely make them uncomfortable so they're discouraged from getting an abortion.
Yeah.
I give you that because there's no end to how invasive the GOP is willing to be when it comes to their agenda. And that has nothing to do with safety. That has nothing to do with logic. It has everything to do with intimidation. So for them to pretend as if they're worried about privacy or invasive procedures, again, let me just emphasize, they have no leg to stand on. They're full of crap. That's it. Yeah. End of story.
100%. 100%. Okay, everyone. By the way, quick tie into this show. I know people are acknowledging that we are at 666,000 subscribers. Is that like a sign of the coming of the beast? Yes. Are we going to be doing some sort of product overlap with Lil Nas X? Yes. And we're also telling you there's a limited time offer. The next 666 Twitch or YouTube members, your membership will come with one drop of my blood. So click that quickly. Hail Satan. Anyway, Anna, thank you as always for joining us. You're amazing. You don't need me to tell you that because everyone is telling you that. Thank you for everything.
Thank you guys. Thanks to your audience. Thanks to Marissa who produces this show. And thanks, John. Love doing
it. And Sophie. Yeah. And Anna will be on The Young Turks, of course, later on today. So you can definitely join her there. Thanks, Anna.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.